Rejoice, dear listener, for your endless march through the internet has finally produced something to add meaning to your empty, meandering existence. Your friends at Idiots Discuss the Universe are digging up musical gems of the past and deciding if they have any shine left or not. Welcome to Old Gold.
Ding sort of annoys me.
Yeah.
I mean, and I guess they annoy me because I kind of wish that I was them. You know what I'm saying? I wish I was like singer-songwriter dude from England that was like going in the 70s and the 80s and the early 90s. You know what I'm saying? It's just like just the coolest, cool fucking dude ever.
And they play stadiums and shit. You know, huge.
And then they're just, I'm going to go to the jungle, man, and then I'm going to rescue some natives and do some green
peace
stuff.
Yeah, the people of Ethiopia are some of the most gentle people. I hang out with them once a summer.
Dude, it would have been great.
Yeah.
And then I bought a castle in Ireland and, you know, it's a place to relax.
Yeah,
you know,
place
I could
to
write
rela-
some songs.
Exactly.
You know, is that so wrong? Is that not something that
is
everybody
that so
does?
Is that so wrong? Should
you know,
I not have 14
I
wives?
Used to teach high school for like 6 months. I know what it's like to be, you know, And, but I mean, I hate him in the sense of I also really like love all their music, but in the sense like I kind of don't enjoy them. He just put his hat on over his microphone.
Over my headphones. It's the new look.
But it's fine. But we're going with it. We're going with an artist that would agree with Spenny. He didn't really care about like facial manipulation or appearing as distasteful as possible to the onlooker if he needed to, as far as he would just throw a hat over his microphone and just walk out the front door and just greet the world. He would have no problem with that.
Oh, me.
You and the guy that we're going to talk about today on this episode of Old Gold.
Old Gold!
And that is a follow-up to one that we did just a little while ago, Peter Gabriel. We're going to do another Peter Gabriel.
It's Peter Gabriel.
Because we're working through old Pete's discography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, well, in a way we are because we're skipping the second album because I listened to that and I was like, it's just like a not as good version of the first album.
Really?
Kind of, or just more.
It's funny because it's called Scratch.
Yeah.
Like scratch tracks.
It's got a great cover.
It does.
Yeah.
The cover's cool.
And it's just kind of more of that first. And I was just kind of like already tired of having like, you know, I was just kind of like just tired.
Sounds like it just didn't hit you in the best spot.
I just kept, well, what songs off of this do I want to play? And I just couldn't ever really pick one that I was excited to like play, you know? So I just like, let's skip it. Life's too short. Let's go on to the next album, which I love.
Right.
And I'm excited to share with Spenny and everybody out there in podcast land. Just fucking the 1980s hit Melt.
Melt.
Peter Gabriel 3, everybody.
Huh.
Yeah, it's arguably the one where his vision coalesced and he turned into the Peter Gabriel that we all know and love today, you know, in a certain way.
Okay.
And
this is where it happened, huh?
Yeah, just a wild group of artists and musicians that played on this album. And I think we should start out with like playing like the intro song on this album just to kind of get the mood of the whole thing.
Cool.
We're going to play like 4 songs off of this album.
Sweet.
But one thing I want to make a note of as we go through this, and I never really realized this until I was doing some research for this episode, but I can't think of any instances as I was going through the songs. But Peter Gabriel had a request at the beginning of this album that he didn't want any cymbals used in the album at all. And Phil Collins was one of the main drummers off of this. And this was a source, and so with that stipulation in mind, which Phil Collins was amenable about, you know, and then the other drummer, the Jerry Marotta was the other drummer, and he was also kind of cool with it, you know, but they're both like, you know.
Yeah.
But like Steve Lillywhite, you've heard of that
I've
producer.
Heard of that. Yeah.
So Lillywhite and Hugh Pugham, I think is how you say him, were the producer and engineer that worked together to get this reverb drum effect that was like kind of like the gated reverb drum set.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking? Does that sound familiar to you?
Like, sort of.
They were the ones that came up with that sound of 80s drums.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The gated reverb. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
so
like
it's
a high
reverb, but
noise
it cuts out.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's and like, and they did that. Really, the initial time was with Phil Collins playing drums on this album.
Okay.
Even though it went on with Ecstasy and Phil Collins solo stuff, like In the Air Tonight is the most famous example of that style of drum production, I say. But it went all through 80s music. You know, it was a huge thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was a big part of that sound. But this is like really like the first time that it kind of showed up. And thanks to Lily White and Pugham.
Lily White and Pugham.
Yeah. So let's listen to Intruder off of this album, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about the Troubles. The Troubles.
All right. Oh, the Troubles. All right, let's do it. It was like an early 1980s precursor to like Nine Inch Nails. Like this reminds me of like Trent Reznor was in 1980 kind of a thing.
Sure.
Or you can just see the natural progression of someone who's got access to a bunch of musical gear, can play a bunch of instruments, you know, is kind of like forward thinking and willing to experiment.
Right.
Yeah, it's fucking cool.
Yeah, it is a precursor to all that stuff. It really is kind of like one of the essential pieces to like understanding, like, you know, Nine Inch Nails. And like this album is so core is to all of that music.
It's like, Trent Reznor just ripped this shit off.
Well, I mean, like,
not really, but you know what I mean. Like, this is pretty. I was pretty surprised.
It's kind of a complete package.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. Like, it kind of is, and you'll see a little bit more of that here. He was accepted. He was on Atlantic Records, you know, and they had released the last couple of Genesis albums, and they released the first couple Peter Gabriel albums. But when they heard this album, they're like, "There's no way we're going to release this." Like, is Peter Gabriel having a mental breakdown? What is going on?
Mm.
And we'll get into that because Peter Gabriel did sort of have a mental breakdown, and he does like kind of touch on that later on in his music as well, because he did kind of think he even went to an institution for a short while.
Really?
But like when they heard this album, they're like, this is like a downward spiral of a madman. You know, like this is really not something that we can get behind.
Damn.
But sure enough, you know, like Mercury Records came along and they're like, oh, you know, yeah, we'll release it. And then I think that another company bought that and released it, and it's become this like huge like thing. It's just been promoted and promoted on, but it did take a long time, and they didn't, it was really going to get buried at one point. But it got to number one in the UK, and it was number 22 in the USA, like the first time that he really kind of got any sort of notoriety. And so many people appear on it, like Kate Bush appears on it, Robert Fripp's playing guitar, David Rhodes, just huge list of different people. But it was like a rotating thing with Peter Gabriel being like the one constant through all of the songs.
Yeah.
And Phil Collins played through about half. And there's like several people that played through a good chunk of it, you know.
Cool.
But it's all pretty consistently in the same soundscape.
Yeah.
And we're not going to play like a couple of the singles off of this, because you've heard the song Game Without Frontiers, I'm sure.
I don't know.
Games Without Frontiers, War Without Fears.
That sounds pretty familiar, but I don't. I'm sure
we're
I
not
have.
We're not playing
we're
that
not
one.
Playing
you know,
that
that's
one.
That's one of the singles, and it's okay. Probably one of his most highest charting. And like I just figured you knew it. Most people that know Peter Gabriel know it.
Okay.
And I'm just thinking it's kind of sing songy, and it's just not like kind of okay. Like my mood right now. So we're not gonna play that. We're gonna play,
sure.
We're gonna play a little bit of the creepier stuff that the record label didn't like, I think is what we're gonna play. But we're gonna play one of the other singles off of this album, which is surprising, I guess, you know. But it is No Self Control, which I think is the second song off of this album.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of just kind of carrying on the themes of that last album of being just like a, you know, weird serial killer person just hiding in someone's house, you
right.
know, like
yeah.
while they're sleeping or the lights are out,
creeping around,
you know,
on the floor.
I've cut the wires of electricity. Now I'm in your house.
Like, Peter, are you describing a real situation? No. I'm really getting inside the mind of a killer.
It's all fine.
I go down the street to my neighbor's house. I poop in his yard.
So continuing on this theme, to reassure the executives, I'm sure as they learn some, oh, that was an interesting thing. I wonder if that's going to continue with the rest of the album. And he's really going insane. This next song is also going to kind of help out with that. But it's a great tune too. So No Self Control. Let's check it out.
Let's check it out.
Some food. I'm so hungry all the time. I don't know how to stop. I don't know how to stop. Gotta get some sleep. I'm so nervous in the night. And I don't know how to stop. I don't know how to stop. I don't know how to stop. I don't know how to stop.
Song to the secretary, and He made it. She started to cry, Peter. she didn't like it. We really... Are you okay, mate? Because it's really a lot of sounds and noise and nonsense. This is the record executive.
It's very good. It's very good.
Yeah. But I know that was awesome.
And I'm sure that was a conversation. That was almost perfect, probably. Yeah. You could have played the record executive in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Make the movie. That's almost perfect.
Yeah.
That's probably exactly how they put it.
Yeah, listen, mate. You know, it could be brilliant to somebody, but, you know, it's not going to sell. It's not going to sell. And I showed it to me mom, and she cried.
Right.
I showed it, and she cried. And then she had to have her tea and biscuits, and God bless the queen, you know.
Yeah. Well, that got a little stereotypical towards the end of it, but I think you got
the
basic mood. But what did you think of the song?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Wild. Weird. Ahead of its time. Probably still, like... unmatched as far as like if you were to strip away the temporal context of being made in the 80s, it's like very cutting edge and very like
does it sound 80s to you?
I mean, yeah,
in the same sense of like,
but no,
Michael Jackson sounds eight. I don't know what is like the quintessence, like the Cars to me is, well, like,
okay, these drums,
the Cars are the essential 80s kind of thing.
Cars and like Madonna, you know,
okay,
yeah, stuff like that, you know, and the drums on here, and then the vocal, like, you know, back to his vocal, it's like somehow him and Phil Collins and Sting all have this way of singing to where I'm just like, oh, well, it's the 80s now.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And
even other bands like Mr. Mister and that other song. Fuck. It's another three-piece. I was going to do Old Gold with, like, three-piece bands.
Rush? No, I don't know.
Maybe it is Mr. Mister that I'm thinking of. God damn it.
Gosh darn
God
it.
God damn it. It's always, I can always think of it, and now I can't. And I think in that spirit, we should play the next song, because the name of the next song is I Don't Remember, and we're going to play that one. And then we're going to talk about the last reason why the Atlantic didn't want to release the album in America.
Okay.
No one wanted to release the album in America, you know. And also, like, the weird, I don't know, I can't remember this. What do they call it? Like,
the promotion?
When things in the past change. Like the Berenstain Bears and the Berenstain Bears.
Oh,
what is that called? Mandela Effect.
Yeah.
No, I figured out like what people are thinking of as far as the Mandela Effect, and I think this song is one of the reasons that. Well, this is very cryptic. This touches on it. So we'll play this song, I Don't Remember, and then we'll come back and talk about a couple things, and then we'll send everybody home with Biko.
Biko.
Yeah, which is the last song on the album.
Okay. Cool.
Cool. So let's check out I Don't Remember.
I don't remember. Kill it.
I got no means to show identification. I got no paper to show you what I am. You'll have to take me just the way that you find me. What's gone is gone, and I do not give a damn. I got
just a little more poppy, a little more dancey, a little more kind of like Shock the Monkey, the kind of some things that are kind of come up. You know, he's trying to find that place where he can make a whole bunch of money with a pop song.
Right.
And he'll find it next album.
Okay.
Didn't really get it here, but it's tantalizingly close, and it's on the side of things that I like, you know, with him, where it's not, you know, it still ends with the weird sound and, like, you know.
Yeah.
But that's just got such a cool soundscape to it, you know. Yeah. I mean, the vocal's a little repetitive, really, in a lot of ways, but, like, the vocal
effect.
It's
a good chorus.
It's
a good chorus. Yeah. But yeah, he does say, I don't remember a lot.
But it's also that kind of punk drumming chorus that, I don't remember, I don't recall,
yeah.
I don't remember nothing at all. You know, yeah, like, totally. And I'm just like, okay.
Okay, bud.
Okay, you settle down now.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what the record execs thought, too.
And
settle down, mate.
But again, like, it is like one of those things that the record execs are like, okay, that's a little bit disturbing too.
Well, it's like you couldn't listen to this album and be like, this guy sucks. You know what I mean? You'd be like, oh no, he's good, but he's going crazy.
Right.
You know?
And they knew he was good. I mean, like, he had like a steady, he was one of those prog dudes that had a steady, he was going to sell whatever, 50,000 records, no matter what he put out, you know, and they were pretty sure. So he was a safe deal, and he might like just sell another 50,000 or 100,000 or who knows, you know? Yeah. And someday they thought maybe he would make it big. And at that time, like, he would have been canceled today, like, just right away. But, like, at that time, like, oh, there's a potential that he's going to have, like, a big album when he's older, after he's kind of developed a little bit, and we're all going to make just huge money for the rest of our lives.
Hmm.
Because they heard, like, those kind of singles in him, that high-quality pop single that would be interesting enough, the Africa's Toto, you know, that's, like, musically interesting, and everybody can sing along to it.
Right.
Both. You know, and that's the kind of shit that, like, radio will play for the rest of everyone's lives. Our grandchildren will be listening to Africa by Toto on the radio.
Yeah, so true.
Yes. I'm surprisingly okay with that.
Me too. Yeah. We've been listening to a lot of Toto at the cart.
Dude, it's great.
They're
so great.
They're so good.
They're so good.
Dude, there's this there's a remastered footage from, I think, a concert in like 92 or something where they're playing.
Uh-huh.
And it's so cool.
Dude, they're so good.
We kill
they're
it.
Like one of my favorite 80s bands.
Who's the guitar guy? I mean, he's like the main guy.
Steve Llewellyn? I want to say. No, or...
I don't know
their names, dude. I'm so bad. I mean, like, I know that there's like the keyboardist is great, and they're all like legends, and they're all like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But what is this? It's a Llewellyn. I think it's something Llewellyn.
I believe you. That's what it is. I have no inkling. But
I could totally see him.
The hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even later. Because I mean, they're Michael Jackson's backup band, dude. Did you know that?
No.
I mean, like, on Thriller, like, that's who's playing in Thriller.
Really?
Through the majority of the album.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I thought it was.
That's why that's so great.
I thought it was, what's his face? The
Quincy Jones was the producer.
Right.
Toto was the studio band that they had for Thriller.
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
And, like, they were really, like, involved in it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, for sure.
Whoa.
Yeah. So play some Thriller at the cart.
That's
cool. This is Toto.
Because
it is. It's absolutely all of it's Toto with Michael Jackson singing, pretty much.
What?
And you'll hear it. Once you listen to it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's fucking Toto.
Yeah.
It's just Toto being, like, super funky, like, you know.
Thriller. Huh. Damn, that's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah. Listen to Thriller again, and it's a Toto album in a certain way. Like,
Was that the only one they did?
Yeah, I think so. By that time, after that, they were kind of too big to be doing, like, studio stuff for other people.
Yeah.
Because their album came out, like, I want to say 84, like, when they really hit, you know, and they were all, like, studio dudes, and then that first album came out, like, 83 or 84.
Okay. When
they would have been simultaneously, like, Michael Jackson would still be a big enough draw that they'd be like, oh, I'll go work with Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson.
Right.
You know, even though I'm in Toto.
Yeah.
Because that first album wasn't a huge deal. The second album is when they had Africa and Rosanna.
Okay.
And that's the one that they're just like, ooh, two number one songs, yeah. You know, two classics forever. And then they had a couple other kind of 90-ish stuff when they were in the shoulder padded period. And then it just all went.
What's that one song? Hold the line.
That's from the first album.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best one.
That was the breakout single. But they were still like, when Michael Jackson calls and that's your only song, you come. And
yeah, play. I guess so.
You know, you can't say no to Quincy Jones called and said, hey, Spenny, we want you to play a song.
Sorry, Quince. Sorry, bud. We're working on the new Odious album. So, yeah, don't have time for that. Yeah.
Yeah, see.
No, I would absolutely jump at it in a heartbeat. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'd drop everything. You'd never hear from me again.
Yeah, I think most. Yeah, I think anybody would. You'd have to be pretty big to like reduce that. You know, for sure. Yeah, so cool. Like in the last reason. Okay, first of all, like Mandela effect. Like the reason it's called the Mandela effect is because
Nelson Mandela.
And what about it?
Not dead, or he's alive and dead, but wasn't dead while he was alive. No, people thought that he died, right?
Right.
And then a bunch of people found out that that wasn't the case. A lot of them remember him dying in jail, but then what really happened was he was like let go at some point.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Is that bad?
I'm sorry,
is
everyone.
Is that good?
But that has some key aspects of what was going on, for sure. You got the basic thing. It's like it's called the Mandela effect because the original thing is like Nelson Mandela really died. And everyone's like, wait, I thought Nelson Mandela already died in the 80s.
Oh.
I remember seeing like the parade and everything and everybody freaking out in South Africa after he died in prison. And what really happened, and what I remember, is that Nelson Mandela was in prison until apartheid was ended in like the late 80s. And then he was released from prison and he ran for president of South Africa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was the president of South Africa for a long time.
President of South Africa.
And then he became a very old man and he died.
Right.
You know, and that's what I remember. But like it's called the Mandela effect because people remember a big funeral in South Africa in the 80s. Or like the late 70s, I think, is what they're actually thinking of. And this song is about the guy that died in South Africa in the late 70s, Stephen Biko.
They just get it confused.
I think is what's going on.
Okay.
And so like when they were doing all of the documentaries and the news reporting of South Africa, they always showed like the riots and the huge protests and everything when Stephen Biko was murdered in prison.
Okay.
And that was probably linked to like, you know, Mandela, who is currently in prison, because they were both like, you know, kind of the leader, different points of like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King or whatever, you know, it's like whatever parallels you would want to say. And like that sort of same thing in South Africa, those two dudes were like kind of big movers and shakers in that movement for sure. And I think that it got confused because they used a lot of that footage later on in the documentaries and all of that stuff. And they talked about Stephen Biko. But again, like, you know, I'm saying it got kind of confused.
Yeah.
Because people in America aren't real smart and it's so far away, has no bearing on anything. Right.
Right.
So that's
not
why.
Very smart.
Or like, you know, the reptiles have figured out a way, or the CERN circle is fucking with our past. That's also possible.
Oh, God, there's so many ways.
And it's doing it through, like, cereal box labels. So that's also possible.
Yeah.
I don't want to discredit any of that.
There's all the different possibilities, all the different universes.
But Atlantic Records, when that was their final thing, it's like, it sounds like he's going out of his mind, and we're not going to release it. And then the last song is about someone that nobody in America or Europe has any idea who they are.
Right.
Nobody cares about a black person in South Africa.
Right.
And that turned out to be like one of the huge things that people talked about all the way through the 80s in music. You know, South Africa was a huge musical influence in the 80s.
Oh.
I mean, Paul Simon's Graceland was a huge album, and those sort of rhythmic, polyrhythmic sort of things, like, entered music in a big way from that. And a lot of it came through South Africa and like that. Paul Simon and the Police and a lot of that mining of that Caribbean, but even that more African and Middle Eastern sort of, you know, pulling things out of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know. There's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
And it really gave a birth to it. A lot of different genres. It spread all over. But Peter Gabriel was right there at the beginning of that whole, like, just... like Peter Gabriel says, like, I'm not particularly good at any instrument. But he's like, I have a way of, like, getting a lot of people that are really good at instruments and can do things. And I can tell them exactly what I want and how to do it, you know. And it makes the... And I tell it in a way that makes them... better. You know, I think, like,
yeah, he's like a director.
He's like, I'm a really good director, and then he's like, I sing and I write good songs.
Yeah.
You know. But like, I also have a way of like working with like really talented people, and it's just like giving them the right limitations that make them like like interested in what they're doing.
Right, right. Totally.
But I'm also someone that can tell them to like, fuck you, that's not working.
Yeah, that's shit. That's shit, mate.
Yeah. And I think he is kind of like a, you know,
a little bit of a stickler.
Yeah. But
that's how you get good stuff. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
But he knows, like, he's kind of got a, you know, and you listen to the albums, even the real disparate ones like that first album, you can still tell that each song, he's more of a song-by-song person, but he knows exactly what the hell he wants, you know, and it is that.
It's always so specific,
And
yeah.
This is the first album that he's like, okay, this is going to be the mood all the way through the album.
Yeah.
And he's very particular about that, you know, and I think he's moving around with different musicians to get the points that he wants, because it covers everything from like political assassination to all sorts of things. You know, it maybe gets darker, Svenny, you know, if you listen to it. But this is the end of it, and it's about Stephen Biko getting beaten to death in a police precinct building, but that's going to be what we're going to leave everybody with tonight. We're just going to send everybody home with a little bit of Biko.
A little Biko?
And
a little
thanks
bit of
y'all
Biko
for checking out. We got a lot of great Peter Gabriel ahead. Maybe like two more episodes about Peter Gabriel. Are you
Hell
up for
yeah.
that, Spenny? Two or three?
I guess I'll have to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, I'm up for it.
Because there's
It'll
like,
be good.
There's even the world music's period of time that,
well,
that we could talk about.
Well,
yeah. You ever heard the Passion for the Christ soundtrack, Spenny?
Passion of the Christ or for the Christ?
The movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen the movie, so.
Oh, the soundtrack is so.
Is
amazing.
It Peter Gabriel?
It's Peter Gabriel.
Oh. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Okay.
So, yeah, let's check out Biko, and we'll see everybody in a little while.
All right. Bye, people. Yeah.